We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance. Helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, Jorge, in this current heat wave, is South Pasadena feeling hot or not?
You mean the temperature, the housing market, or the people?
Oh, I'm endlessly curious. I want to know about all of it.
It's hot in all accounts. House prices are through the roof. The temperature is really hot. And the people, I think, are pretty hot.
Are you guys like in danger of melting into a puddle of hotness?
Yeah, it's like a big volcano out here.
So where is the epicenter? From where is all this hotness flowing?
I'm not giving you my home address, man. It's too hot. Hi, I'm Jorge, a cartoonist and the author of Oliver's Great Big Universe.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist and a professor at UC Irvine, and I totally dig the heat.
You like the heat?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a desert person. Heat and dry air is my jam.
You and lizards.
Me and lizards, exactly. Lizards know what's up, man. You don't see lizards in Chicago in the winter for a reason. It's miserable.
Well, maybe they just don't like deep dish pizza.
I'm pretty sure there were no lizards in Chicago like 500 years ago before pizza was even invented.
I'm pretty sure there were dinosaurs in Chicago 500 million years ago.
But you know, it's not miserable for people who love the snow, and I'm just not one of those people.
You're a snow fan.
It's a slippery subject.
Ooh, an icy reception there from Daniel Whiteson. But anyways, welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we treat the universe with a warm heart and an open mind. We try to soak up all of the information that's coming to us from the distant cosmos and from our nearby star to get an understanding of how everything works, to tell ourselves a mathematical story about how the universe clicks together and operates to make this incredible cosmos that we live in.
That's right, because it is a pretty hot universe full of things going on, things moving about, and a lot of attractive forces going on. And repulsive, I guess, at the same time.
I guess hot is pretty relative, though. I mean, compared to the history of the universe, we're basically at its coldest moment.
Ever? Isn't the universe going to get colder?
Well, it's the coldest moment so far. Absolutely. The universe just keeps cooling and cooling as it expands. So every moment is the coldest moment we've ever had.
But it also means it's hot, the hottest pretty hot compared to how cold it's going to get.
That's right. We're all getting less and less hot as time goes on.
I don't know about all of us. I think I'm aging pretty well.
You and Harrison Ford are violating thermodynamics.
That's right. That's right. Unlike, I guess, Keanu Reeves, who's not aging at all.
I thought you were about to say he's aging badly. I was holding my breath there. Whew.
No. I think the whole universe agrees Keanu Reeves is not aging.
He's frozen in time somehow. That's true.
He's somehow violating the laws of physics. Maybe he's a lizard, too.
Let's get him on the podcast and ask his opinion of deep dish pizza.
Yeah, we'll place a call, especially after we called him a lizard. But it is a pretty interesting universe full of all kinds of things going on and all kinds of questions to ask about it, which is the job of scientists and also the public and everyday people.
It's just part of being human to be curious about the nature of the world we live in. You can't help but ask yourself questions when you see something. How does that work? How does that connect with this other idea I have? If the universe is microscopically all these tiny whizzing particles, how does that all come together to make this rock feel hot to me right now? There's so many questions we can ask about the nature of the universe, and we want you to ask them because it's a deep part of the joy of being human, and also it literally fuels all of our science. If humanity stop being curious about science, we wouldn't get to do it anymore. So please keep asking questions.
Or at least keep funding scientists to ask questions professionally. But yeah, everyone can ask questions though.
Everyone can, everyone should, and everyone does ask questions. And on this podcast, we encourage you to send us your questions. If you're curious about something you don't understand, please write to us to questions@danielandjorge.com. We write back to everybody. We answer everybody's questions, even if it takes one reply or a whole series of emails.
That's right. Sometimes the questions you send in, we'll get an answer. And sometimes we pick them to be on the podcast because they're so interesting that we think that everyone would be interested in knowing the answer.
That's right. And so from the daily onslaught of emails from listeners, I've picked a new batch of questions for us to answer.
So today on the podcast, we'll be tackling... listener questions. Number 43, light, vision, and heat. That sounds like the... like an album title. Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, The Sound and the Fury. Light, Vision, and Heat.
It sounds like our 80s electronica album.
Yeah, there you go.
Pull out that synthesizer, man.
Well, or we can just beatbox it, I guess. How's your singing voice?
I got a baritone. It's out of tune, but I got a baritone.
I'll just do the doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. But yeah, we got some awesome questions here today about light, vision, and heat, about what kinds of particles humans can and might be able to see in the future, about how to vaporize liquid water, and about the spectrum of light. So let's dig into it. Our first question comes from Milo, who's 6 years old.
Hey guys, I have a question. Could people evolve to see other particles besides photons? Like neutrons, protons, and a whole bunch more.
Awesome question from a six-year-old. That's amazing. There's like so many science concepts in that one question.
I
feel like there's a whole high school curriculum there.
Milo is amazing. Wow. I don't think I knew about neutrons, protons, and a whole bunch more when I was 6 years old.
I don't think I was pondering the evolution of human sensory organs at 6 years old.
I felt like neutrons, protons, and a whole bunch more should be like a breakfast cereal that Milo invents.
Neutrinos already sounds like a breakfast cereal name.
Neutrinos? Like, do you take your neutrinos with milk?
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of neutral to it. Oat milk, soy milk, you all charge the same.
Seems like something you need just a tiny little sip of, right? Nobody has a big bowl of neutrinos, just like a little espresso shot of neutrinos to start your day.
Well, it depends on your diet, I guess. But yeah, it's an interesting question. And let's break it down here. So Milo wants to know, could people evolve to see other particles besides photons? Other particles like neutrons, protons, and a bunch more.
Yeah, it's a really cool question. And he starts with seeing, right? Can we see other particles besides photons? And he's right that technically what we're seeing are photons. Like when you look out at the view in front of you, you're getting light bounced off of the rocks and the trees and the grass and the water. Different wavelengths are coming and hitting your eyes and making up that vision that you see. So when you see, it's the photons around you that you are most directly seeing.
Yeah. And how does that work? I guess a photon enters your eye and it hits the, you know, receptor cones in the back of your eye. And then that creates a brain signal.
Yeah. There are these amazing proteins inside the rods and cones of your eyeball, which respond to various frequencies of light. They like flip a switch. They change their configuration and that generates a signal, which goes down the optic nerve. And then your brain interprets it as a certain color or brightness or darkness. And we did a fun podcast episode about like the amazing ability of the human eye to see a single individual photon. There are these incredible experiments they did, which verified that the human eye can detect a single photon at a time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I guess those only respond to photons, right? Which is light. Like if you shoot it with another kind of particle, would it create, is it possible that it can create a signal that you might detect?
So probably not. If one of those proteins got hit by a proton or a neutron or something, it wouldn't react the same way and give you that signal. But remember that those rods and cones are embedded kind of deep in your eye. You have to get all the way through like the lens and the fluid and all that stuff to the back of the eyeball. So if a proton hit those rods and cones directly, you probably wouldn't see it. But another question is, what would happen if you shot a single proton or neutron into your eyeball? Would you then see it? And the answer to that is probably yes.
What do you mean?
Well, a proton and a neutron will not just pass through your eyeball. It will interact with the material in your eyeball. Protons and neutrons are made out of quarks. The stuff in your eyeball is made out of quarks. So protons and neutrons will not just pass through your eyeball. It's like throwing a tennis ball at a rock wall, right? It's either going to bounce off or it's going to smash through. And when it smashes through, it's going to break open those particles and it's going to create all sorts of showers of particles, including photons.
So you might see like a flash of light as a proton enters your eye, maybe hit some of the water inside of your eyeball, and then it creates like a little light spark.
Exactly. And so you can argue about whether you're technically seeing the proton because the rods and cones themselves are not interacting with the proton, but the proton is causing a shower of particles, some of which are photons. And that's actually how we see protons, like at the Large Hadron Collider. You create a proton in the collision, you don't see the proton directly. It smashes into these like layers of steel or depleted uranium and then creates showers of particles, which we then can see, mostly the photons that are created.
So you have like a little particle collider in your eye. The Large Eye Collider.
I'm not recommending anybody shoot protons at their eyeball, but I'm saying if it did happen, you probably would see a flash. If there's high enough energy, if you just like very gently throw a proton at your eyeball, it'll just bounce off. The same way like a tennis ball will bounce off of a wall, but a bullet shooting really hard will penetrate in. And so it just depends on the energy of the proton.
You mean like the speed of it? Like it has to be going fast enough for you to maybe be able to see a proton or neutron.
Exactly. If it's going really slow, it's just going to bounce off. And the same is true of a neutron. A neutron is also a little bag of quarks. If you shoot it at very high energy at your eyeball, it'll create little flashes of light inside your eyeball and you'll see them.
But it's also, I think, not good, right? Like if you shoot a bunch of protons into your eye, it's gonna kill your eye, isn't it?
Yeah, these are mini bullets, right? You're shooting tiny bullets at eyeballs. Not something we recommend. I mean, I'm answering the question, would you see it? The answer is yes, not should you do it. That answer is definitely no. Do not do this experiment.
Or like, for example, when astronauts are out there in space in near orbit, I mean, they need a lot of shielding in the space station just because of things like protons and neutrons raining down on them, right? Like those are not good to be hit with.
Yeah, exactly. Cosmic rays are nothing but high energy particles in space, usually produced by the sun or from other stars, etc. Those are high energy electrons or protons, etc. And yeah, you don't want to get hit by those. Those are tiny bullets and they can pass through your body and cause all sorts of damage. They can wreck your DNA, they can deposit energy, all sorts of stuff. And that's true of any particle that has the strong force, meaning it's made of quarks, or any particle that has electromagnetism, right? You shoot an electron at your eyeball, the same kind of stuff is going to happen. It's going to generate photons as it interacts with your eyeball. And that's true of basically any particle we know about except neutrinos.
Wait, electrons. Electrons might possibly activate one of your eye sensors, right? Eye rods or cones, couldn't they? Because they sort of work electrically.
Yeah, it's going to be one step removed because the way an electron would interact with it is by emitting a photon. And so it's the photon more directly that you're seeing. And when an electron enters a medium like that, it slows down or changes direction. And to do so, it emits photons. So electrons will also create showers of photons when they hit something. And that, again, happens at particle colliders. We produce very high energy electrons and they create these showers of photons, which then produce more electrons, which produce more photons. And you start out with like one high energy particle. people, you end up with like a billion lower energy photons.
But could an electron maybe make it all the way to the back of your eye and hit one of your eye sensors and then flip the switch?
An electron could make it all the way back to your eye and hit one of those proteins. But those proteins are very sensitive, right? They're designed to respond only to certain frequencies of light, which is how you can tell the difference between green and red and blue, because some sensors have flipped and other sensors have not flipped. So a random electron banging into it, I don't know what's going to happen. It's sort of like asking, like, what poem would you type if you randomly mashed on the keyboard? Like, I don't know.
So you're saying we can see electron poetry. That's what I got from that. No, I'm just kidding. You're saying you might see an occasional electron directly, but it's not likely, maybe.
Yeah, mostly you would see an electron if it creates photons in your eyeball, which it would. If it's moving at high speed through the medium of your eyeball, it will be creating photons as it interacts with atomic electrons and atomic nuclei.
Mm. All right. Now, what about my last question? Second part of the question, which asked about a bunch more particles. What about all the other particles?
Yeah, so the other particles are ones that don't have electromagnetic or strong interactions. And so far, that list is just neutrinos, so it might also include dark matter eventually, right? So like you can ask, could we evolve to detect neutrinos? Well, in principle, it is possible to detect neutrinos. It's just that neutrinos are very, very hard to detect. There's lots of them all over the place, but they interact very, very rarely. So, for example, in order to detect the existence of neutrinos in the first place, they had to set up these instruments that have like 100,000 gallons of special fluid just to detect a few neutrinos a week when there's like trillions and trillions of them passing through. That means that the physics is there for materials to interact with neutrinos, which means you could evolve a body part to do it, but it would have to be enormous.
Well, what happens when, I feel like your eyeball is sort of one of these water detectors, right? Like liquid detectors, right? It is technically possible for a neutrino, because we're getting showered with them by the billions, trillions. It is possible for one of them to interact with maybe a water molecule inside your eye and generate some photons, right?
Oh, yeah, it's totally possible. In that sense, yes, your eyeball can see neutrinos indirectly. The same way you can see electrons, like a neutrino passing through your eyeball could give an electron a little kick, and that electron could then generate some photons, or it could give an atomic nucleus a kick and break it apart, or that nucleus could vibrate and rotate and then emit a photon. So yeah, indirectly, neutrinos can deposit their energy inside the stuff in your eyeball, and then you could see it. It's just that it's much less likely. Like you shoot an electron at your eyeball, you're almost definitely going to see every individual single electron. You shoot a neutrino at your eyeball, you have like a 1 in a gazillion chance of seeing it.
So you can detect neutrinos, just not all of them, I guess. Or it's very unlikely for you to detect a neutrino.
Yeah, if you wanted to like use neutrino vision, if you wanted to have a reliable neutrino sense, you'd have to evolve some kind of eyeball that was either very, very, very large, you know, we're talking like swimming pool size tanks of liquid, or very, very, very dense, so the neutrinos had a harder time getting through it. Seems pretty impractical, unless, you know, you're enormous.
Or maybe you just don't need to detect all of them, right? Like night vision.
Well, I think in the case of night vision, you are detecting those photons. You're super sensitive to individual ones because they're so rare. But you're right. We don't need to necessarily detect all of them. I guess it depends on what you want to do. Like, what are neutrinos useful for? What can you know about the universe if you could see neutrinos?
That's an interesting question. What would happen if you could? Would you have like X-ray vision, kind of?
Well, you know, if you could see neutrinos, then you could see the sun during the nighttime because you could look through the Earth and see the neutrinos because they pass almost entirely unscathed through the Earth. And people have done this. They've built neutrino telescopes and pointed them at the Earth at nighttime and you can see the sun. So you can like verify the sun is still there during nighttime if that's the kind of thing you worry about.
Whoa. Like the sun would be underneath your feet.
Yeah, so I guess in principle, you could prove that the sun will rise tomorrow if you had neutrino eyeballs.
You could predict when the sun will rise. Well, I feel like that's a big part of Milo's question, which is like, could people evolve to see these particles? To evolve something, it has to be kind of useful to evolution, right? To the species. Otherwise, life wouldn't bother getting that ability.
Exactly. And developing new bits costs energy. And so it has to have some sort of benefit. It's interesting to think about that, though, because I think that life on Earth existed for hundreds of millions of years before any of it was photosensitive. Right? We were like bathed in photons and totally blind to them. I'm talking about our microbial ancestors before anybody evolved it. In the same way that like there was no ability to hear sounds for hundreds of millions of years before hearing evolved. So it could take a long time, even for things that seem obvious and have huge benefits. In the case of neutrinos, like I can hardly even think of a benefit. Like it's not going to help you find food or evade hunters. Maybe it could help you like see through a mountain to see if there are caves in there where you could like build a home. I'm really reaching for the application of neutrino eyeballs.
Well, it sounds like having x-ray vision would be useful, right? Like if there's a predator hiding behind a tree or something.
Yeah, but you're going to see right through the predator and through the tree.
But you would see maybe a hint of the predator behind the tree, couldn't you? Sort of how x-rays work.
If the predator and the tree had like different sensitivities to neutrinos, but both of them are going to be like totally invisible to neutrinos. So you're not going to be able to see it. I mean, you could see a predator if they were like generating neutrinos. Oh, you know what you could do is you could detect nuclear reactors all over the world. Right, because those generate neutrinos.
Oh, well, there you go.
You could detect atomic bombs going off, that kind of stuff.
I'm not sure seeing it before it happens is going to really help you once you, if you're that close to an atomic bomb.
Yeah, an atomic bomb's not famously subtle anyway, so.
Yeah, you would see and feel it in other ways.
But it would be super cool, and it's fascinating that there is all this stuff going on in the universe right around us that we don't have senses to. I feel like that's sort of what Milo is reaching for, is like, he wants to know more about what's out there in the universe. He wants to see more. He wants to experience more of these things about the universe. And I totally get that. Like, I feel the same way. I want to know what's out there. I feel like we can only see this tiny sliver of what's really happening in the universe.
Sounds like you need to evolve, Daniel.
It's either that or get frozen in time like Keanu Reeves. I can't decide.
Yeah. How do you know Keanu Reeves can't see neutrinos? Maybe lizards can see neutrinos.
His career is sort of like an atomic bomb. That's true.
Yeah, he keeps blowing up. All right. Well, I think that answers Milo's question. Could people evolve to see other particles besides photons? The answer is yes. Technically, you could. And you have sort of in a way. You can sense with your eyes. You can sense particles like high-speed protons and neutrons and electrons. You can see those with your eyeballs right now if they shoot into your eyes. Again, not recommended, but you can do it. And you can maybe even imagine evolving your eye in some way that you are more sensitive to those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Milo. Let's get to some of these other questions about vaporizing water and also the spectrum of light. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities. But it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
You know that feeling after you've done a deep spring clean of your house when you realize, wow, how have I been living like this? It's kind of like how you feel when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless, while Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. Wow, how have I been affording all this? So it's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Personally, I've used Mint Mobile, and the calls are always so crisp and so clear. All of their plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So it's time to ditch your overpriced wireless and go with Mint Mobile's limited time deal for 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Slower speeds above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
All right, we're answering listener questions here today, and we have some awesome questions by light, vision, and heat. It's getting pretty hot in here.
It's funny, I usually try to group these questions by topic, but these just came in right one after another. It's sort of, people are just naturally thinking about these things at the same time around the world or something.
It's a hot topic. All right, well, let's get to our next question, which comes from Mark from the UK.
Hi, Daniel and Jorge. My name is Mark, and I'm calling from London, UK. I have a hypothetical question for you. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to melt my 1 kilogram block of ice in the fastest time possible. You can use any existing tools or technology, but I'd like 1 kilogram of liquid water as a result of your efforts. So how will you do it? How long will it take you? And why can't it be done any faster? Many thanks. Love the podcast.
All right. Awesome question from Mark. I feel like he's challenging us.
He is. Exactly. This sounds like more of a question for engineers than physicists.
You mean people who can actually do it?
People who like have useful skills to solve real world problems.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm not arguing at all. We'll have to ask that question at my other podcast. Or it fixes the universe with engineering.
Jorge melts your ice.
There you go. All right, well, so the challenge for Mark is to take a 1 kilogram block of ice and melt it into liquid water, but just liquid, I guess, not water vapor, in the fastest way possible. It's like a race.
Yeah, it's a really interesting challenge. You know, the physics, or I guess the chemistry underlying it, of course, is that you need to get some energy into this ice, right? You need to heat it up. You need to get those molecules moving so they break those bonds and they relax and change phases from solid into liquid. So it's all about getting energy into this object as fast as possible.
Yeah, and the tricky thing is you want to liquefy it, not vaporize it.
Yeah, he started out saying melt, and then I was thinking, interesting. We could just like zap that thing with energy. But then he was very specific. He wants a kilogram of liquid water, not steam. So you can't just like blow up a nuclear bomb next to it because that's going to vaporize it.
So he's thirsty. He doesn't want a sauna.
Yeah, I don't know if he has an actual situation where this will improve his life or if he's just challenging us.
Usually people want to freeze water, right? But right now the problem is that the ice caps are melting, which is the opposite problem.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so you're saying a bomb would not work. Like if I explode a bomb, a grenade, a nuclear bomb next to a block of ice, that would definitely take it away from being solid, but it would maybe take it too far and would vaporize it.
Yeah, essentially it would overshoot, right? It would deposit an incredible amount of energy, vaporize it into a fraction of a second, but it wouldn't be something we could then pass to Mark and say, here's your kilogram of liquid water. It would not only be vaporized, it would be dispersed.
Wouldn't it just get blown away, like pushed out of the way?
Oh, would the block of ice survive?
Mm-hmm. Or parts of it, I don't know. I guess it depends on how big of the bomb it is.
It depends on how big the bomb is and how close you are to it. But it's definitely going to be a fireball, and there's going to be a huge amount of energy, right, dumped into it.
It's uncontrolled.
Yeah, you're dumping an incredible amount of energy into the air, and then that creates a shock wave which travels outwards. So it probably would shatter the ice also and dump energy into it.
All right, so a bomb or something explosive wouldn't work. Can we use technology? Can we just stick it in a microwave?
Yeah, a microwave is a cool idea because it deposits energy, right? You take the energy, you create this radiation, that radiation then gets absorbed by the material, and then it heats up. And it's actually especially good at heating up water. And molecules like water have these partial electric dipoles, meaning that they're like more positively charged in one direction and more negatively charged in the other direction. And these get like spun around by the waves. The waves go back and forth and the molecules spin back and forth. So it's actually a very efficient way to heat up liquid water. If you have a tub of liquid water, you put it in the microwave, it's very, very efficient. Dump that energy into the motion, the wiggling of those molecules, heat it up. Unfortunately, it doesn't work nearly as well for frozen water, which is what we're starting with. Because in frozen water, the molecules can't wiggle, so you can't really like get them moving. And you might have noticed, like, you put something frozen in the microwave, it takes a long time to defrost it.
Well, they do sort of wiggle, but they maybe wiggle in place, or maybe they don't wiggle as much.
Yeah, exactly. They don't wiggle as effectively, which is why it's more efficient to put energy into liquid water than frozen water using a microwave. So if your goal is to take water from frozen to liquid, a microwave is not a very efficient way to do it. But it would work.
It's also kind of uncontrolled, right? Like, you might be turning some of those water molecules into vapor, right? Because you're just shooting microwaves into it. You're not controlling which water molecules get the energy.
Yeah, you're going to get hot spots and cold spots, right? And so some of it's going to vaporize and other pieces are still going to be frozen. Exactly. Mark is not going to be a happy customer.
All right. So what else can we do to liquefy this block of ice?
So Mark says we can use any existing technology. So I was thinking, let's go basic. Let's like chop this thing up, because our goal is to dump a bunch of energy into it. And a challenge with a block of ice is getting to the core of it. How do you heat up the center of it? So I thought, well, let's like take this block of ice and chop it into a lot of tiny little pieces. And then we can just melt those individual pieces by like pouring hot water over them.
Wait, what? You can pour hot water into it?
Yeah, if you have an ice cube, you can just pour hot water onto it and that will melt the ice cube.
So your strategy would be chop it up and then dump it all into a not steaming, but still hot tub of water.
Exactly. And if you wanted to melt even faster, you could even pour salt water on it, because salt water melts at a lower temperature than distilled water. I don't know that Mark really wants to drink a kilogram of salt water, but that would melt faster.
Well, I don't know if he wants to drink a whole tub full of salt water. That's your plan. I feel like you've just multiplied his water, sort of like a certain character from the Bible.
Another option is to sort of take advantage of the weird chemistry of water. Water has this weird property that ice takes up more volume than liquid water, right? When you freeze it, it gets bigger instead of getting smaller. And so the opposite effect is cool. When you apply pressure to ice, it tends to melt because you're squeezing it down. So it prefers to change phase down to water, which takes less volume.
So you're saying, like, if I just put pressure on my block of ice, it'll melt?
The phase diagram of water has this weird angle on it. And for some temperatures of ice, if you do increase the pressure, it will turn into water.
So like a regular ice temperature, like 0°C, that would work?
Yeah, 0°C. If you increase the pressure, it will turn into water. And it won't increase the temperature, right? Just if you just increase the pressure and keep the temperature the same, then technically it'll be water. Now, you can't really like serve that to Mark, because as soon as you take away the pressure, it's going to turn back into an ice cube. But you could deliver to him a high pressure kilogram of water in some intense container.
Well, what if you just kind of like squeeze it between in a vise or something, you know, like a press? Wouldn't that just instantly increase the pressure inside the block of ice and melt it?
If you increase it in a press, it's going to crush it, right? You're going to get crushed ice.
How much would you have to squeeze it without breaking it for it to increase the pressure to the melting point?
It depends a little bit on the temperature, but I think the key thing here is you need to maintain that pressure to keep it liquid. And in a vise, you crush it and then it like falls it down. And it's no longer like contained. So I'm talking about like putting it in some like hyper pressure chamber.
Oh, I see. So you're saying putting it inside of a tank and then rapidly pour a bunch of air into the tank to increase the pressure inside the tank. Would that just instantly melt the whole block, or what would happen?
I don't think it would melt the whole block instantly. I think it would work from the outside in as the outer layers are applying pressure to the inner layers. So I don't know exactly how fast it would be, but it is another way to melt ice.
So then I guess Mark's question was, which is the fastest way?
I think the fastest way is to chop it up and grind it and then pour water over it. But those are just my impractical physicist ideas. I'm curious to hear your thoughts as an actual problem-solving engineer.
I think he asked the question of you, Daniel, not me.
Okay, well then my answer is I'll consult with my mechanical engineering friend.
Oh, well then my answer would be let's try a whole bunch of times and see which one is faster.
Okay.
that's how an engineer would tackle.
Screw first principles, let's just try all of them.
Yeah, basically. Well, you know, guided by first principles, you would come up with a bunch of different solutions, try them out and see which one works faster. So I guess the answers for Mark is give us some money and we'll give you an answer. This is going to take a lab and some resources here, Mark, because our physicist has no clear answer here.
Or maybe we should crowdsource it. Maybe somebody out there has a lab that can do these things and enjoys melting ice cubes and has done these experiments. If so, get in touch.
Oh, there you go. It could be the latest TikTok trend. What's the fastest you can melt a block of ice? How big is a kilogram of water? Of ice.
A kilogram of water is not very much, right? It's 1,000 milliliters. It's just a liter of water.
Actually, I have figured out the fastest way to turn this a liter of ice into water for Mark.
What's that?
I would just swap it out. Take his block of ice, hand him a liter of water, done. That's how an engineer would solve this problem.
We have no shortage of liquid water. Let's just serve him up some of it.
That's right. Yeah. It's instant. It's an instant solution. Yeah.
I like it.
There you go. All right, well, I think that answers Mark's question. Let's get to our last question, which is about the spectrum of light and heat from the human body. But first, let's take another quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities, but it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time off to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life to immerse myself in natural beauty and have a unique experience. But you don't have to leave the United States to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. People from Puerto Rico are called Boricuas, but it's not just a name. It's a spirit, a flavor, a rhythm that you can only find in one place on Earth.
Puerto Rico. It's embodied by these proud, passionate people, and you'll feel it in every part of the island. When you bask in the warmth of the beaches, when you taste the love in the food, when you embrace the call of adventure, you'll find the Boricua spirit in yourself as well. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. You can forget where you came from and embrace where you are in Puerto Rico, because your visit ends, but the stories last forever. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
All right, we're getting to our last question of the day, and this one is pretty interesting. It's about body heat. So things might get a little hot. It comes from Eldon from Australia.
Hello, my question is about infrared light and heat and how they relate to each other. I was taught that light comes into the planet as visible light, hits the surface of the Earth, is absorbed, and then reflected as a lower energy infrared, which is what causes the greenhouse effect. Now, what happens to the excess energy when visible light is absorbed by the Earth and then re-emitted as the lower energy infrared? What happens to the infrared that is directly radiated from the sun? Does it hit the Earth and get reflected as a lower energy microwave? Also, if you stand in front of a fire, it is giving off visible and infrared light. Is it giving off any other frequencies of light? And what is infrared's relationship with the thermal heating of particles from the fire? Does a fire's heat come from infrared or the oscillation of air particles, or maybe both? Why do we feel infrared as heat? That's my main question. Is heat just how the human body senses infrared? What I'm asking is essentially, how does heat relate to infrared and how does infrared relate to heat? I've wondered about this phenomenon since I was a little boy. Cheers.
All right. Awesome question or questions from Eldon from Australia. I feel like he snuck like 7 questions in there.
Yeah, I know. Eldon is very curious about how hot he is feeling and whether it's due to infrared light or what.
Yeah. And I've been to Australia and it is pretty hot there. And also the people are pretty hot as well.
And the housing market, I hear also.
Yeah. Yeah. And the lizards are pretty big as well. So yeah, I guess that's just maybe kind of a general question about how heat, or what we interpret as heat, is related to infrared and the spectrum of light.
Exactly. He talks about a lot of different contexts there where infrared light is bouncing around and being absorbed and emitted. So maybe we should start with like, what is infrared light anyway? What are we talking about? And remember that infrared light is just a kind of light. Light comes in lots of different wavelengths, from very, very long wavelengths to very, very short wavelengths. And a tiny fraction of that spectrum we can see, we call visible light. And there's a lot of wavelengths of light we just can't see. Infrared light, for example, has wavelengths that are too long for us to see. Ultraviolet light has wavelengths that are too short for us to see. So infrared light, in the end, is just light with long wavelengths, too long for us to see with our eyeballs.
Okay, that's infrared light. How would you define heat?
So heat is a very tricky topic because it's used in so many ways in so many different contexts.
It's too hot to handle.
It's too hot to handle. You know, there's like the colloquial sense of heat where like you are feeling warm, right? You feel like there's energy being transferred to you. You're warming up. And then there's like the thermodynamic definition of heat, which is maybe not so useful because it's physicists using normal sounding words to define something very, very technical. And in thermodynamics, heat is energy transfer, thermal energy transfer between systems that doesn't count as work. Not something that's like spinning a turbine or lifting something up. All that other kind of energy transfer they call heat.
But I think maybe you're getting a little too technical. I think maybe you can just replace the word hot. Like, what does it mean for something to be hot? Is maybe kind of more what Eldon is asking.
Yeah, I don't think Eldon is asking about the details of thermodynamics, right? But we do
I think he is, but I think he wants us to translate it to everyday terms.
Yeah, and so, you know, what we feel as heat is energy flowing from like hot objects to cold objects.
So something that's hot is something that has kind of energy stored in it and how the molecules are moving.
Heat and temperature are not exactly the same thing, right? Temperature is like a measure of how much energy is inside something. Like particles are whizzing around microscopically. If they're whizzing around really, really fast, that thing is hot. If they're whizzing around slowly, then that thing is cold. So that's temperature. It's like a property of an object. Heat is the flow of energy from one thing to another. So you have something that's hot and something that's cold. Heat is the flow of energy from the hot thing to the cold thing.
Okay. So you're saying something can be hot, but not give off a lot of heat. and something can be hot and give off a lot of heat?
Well, it depends a little on the context, right? You have something at 100 degrees, it's either going to absorb energy or give off energy based on what it's next to. If it's next to something colder, it's going to lose energy too. If it's next to something hotter, it's going to gain energy from it. But I think what Eldon is talking about is like things glowing, like you're standing next to a fire or you're getting energy from the sun, right? And so what he's talking about is like things essentially emitting light, because everything out there does emit. Like you stand next to a rock, it's emitting light. You can't see that light with your eye, but it is emitting light. Everything emits light based on its temperature. The sun emits light at certain frequencies because it's super duper hot. Those frequencies of light happen to be visible. But everything, your body, the earth, rocks, even tiny dust particles in space, give off light, just usually at much lower frequencies than we can see.
So I guess you're saying that when something is hot, it naturally gives off light. But if it's sort of warm and not super duper hot, then most of the light it gives off is in the infrared. That's why we kind of associate, at least in our human experience, hot things with infrared.
Yeah, everything glows in the infrared. But there's another aspect to this, right? Which is like how your body responds to these different frequencies. I mean, you can see some of them with your eyeballs and you can't see other ones, but also they impact your body differently. Like if you have a whole spectrum of light hitting you, then your body responds differently to infrared light and visible light and ultraviolet light and like super duper high energy photons. And infrared light actually will make you feel warmer more than those other frequencies because it's very good at being absorbed by your body. Like we were just talking about with microwaves, your body is good at absorbing infrared radiation because it's well matched to like the vibrational frequencies of your molecules.
And so that's, I think, the connection that Eldon was asking about between heat and infrared, which is that what we call infrared, which is really just like another frequency of light, but it just happens to be the frequency of light that's just beyond our visible spectrum that we can see. That range of frequencies is somehow tuned to our molecules, just like the microwave is, kind of.
Exactly. It can penetrate into your body and heat up stuff. And you might think, well, hold on a second. The other frequencies of light actually have higher energy, like ultraviolet light and blue light has a shorter wavelength and a higher energy, right? And it does have more energy. That's true. But you don't feel it as heat because of how it penetrates your body. UV light is mostly absorbed in a very thin outer layer of your skin. That's why, for example, UV light will give you a sunburn. And as you go even higher energy, like X-rays, your body's mostly transparent to X-rays. X-rays will pass through your body without interacting. So even though X-rays do have more energy, they don't deposit it in your body. And even though ultraviolet light does have more energy than infrared, you don't feel warm when you're bathed in it because it's mostly just like toasting your skin.
But then if it's toasting your skin, you would feel it as heat, wouldn't you?
Well, you do feel it as heat sort of indirectly in the way that you like feel a sunburn, right? You can sit out in the sun and get sunburned, but you don't feel it immediately. Your skin is absorbing that energy and it is getting damaged, but it's not increasing in temperature the same way, right? Whereas like if you were bathed in infrared light, then it's actually shaking those molecules and making them wiggle. Temperature of your flesh goes up. Whereas if you're bathed in UV light, it's mostly just like doing damage to those cells. And eventually you'll feel warm because you'll feel sunburned, and that always feels like uncomfortably glowy, but sort of in a different way.
But in either case, they're depositing energy into your body, right? Like both the UV ray and the infrared are both depositing energy. It's just that somehow we feel the infrared energy light more, or it's just your body's more efficient at absorbing infrared light.
And your body's so efficient at absorbing ultraviolet that it doesn't even penetrate very far beyond your skin. It all gets deposited into your skin. You don't feel it immediately as temperature because mostly it's like breaking bonds inside your cells and doing all sorts of damage. Whereas infrared light will penetrate more deeply, but also has a different effect on the particles, the objects. It makes them rotate and spin and vibrate. It doesn't necessarily break them down, but it heats it up.
I think you're saying like both kinds of light are depositing energy on your body, but the UV light, it's being destructive when it does that, which you don't feel. Like your temperature receptors in your skin are not, you know, designed to feel your cells being destroyed. But the infrared light, sort of like the microwave, it does kind of shake the molecules in your skin, which translates more directly to heat, which your heat sensors are tuned to detect.
Exactly. And so if you had the option, for example, to stand in front front of a 100-watt UV bulb or a 100-watt infrared bulb and you wanted to feel warm, you should stand in front of the infrared bulb because it's going to more efficiently transfer that energy into like the temperature of your flesh. Now, of course, you do it too long and it's going to cook you. And, you know, that's not something we recommend here on the podcast.
That's a little too hot.
He also was asking about like if you stand in front of a fire, what's happening there? And a fire is definitely emitting in the infrared, but it's also releasing a lot of chemical energy, which is just like heating up the molecules of the air. And then those molecules of the air are depositing energy in you. And that's just like thermodynamic transfer. That's just like if you stand next to something warm, in this case, the air near you is warm from the fire, then that warm air is depositing energy on your body, not by radiating light, just by like molecules bouncing off of each other.
But the fire is also generating visible light, right? Like that's why you can see the fire and it's bright.
That's right. So the fire is heating you in lots of ways. It's like directly heating the air, which is heating you up. And it's also emitting light and infrared. Also, everything is glowing in the infrared and the infrared light does heat you up as well.
All right. So then I think to answer the question is like if you have a fire going in front of you, it's generating light in the almost the full spectrum of light. Some of that and light being given off is in the UV, which is heating you up technically, destroying the cells in your body, but you're not feeling as heat. Some of that light is in the infrared, which you do feel as heat because your cells are sort of tuned to receive that kind of energy. And some of it is being transmitted to the air molecules, which you then feel as hot wind.
And then if you have a very nice fire in your backyard, it increases the resale value of your house, which makes the housing market hotter.
That's right. Unless it gets out of control and it burns your house. Then you're in hot water. Which Mark from the UK might enjoy.
Yeah, or if your house is worth nothing, you might actually be underwater with your mortgage, which will put out the housing market.
There you go. At least for your own personal finances.
But again, do not take real estate or financial advice from this podcast, please.
That's right. Or engineering advice, apparently, from at least half of the podcast. All right. Well, those are three really interesting questions about light, vision, and heat. Thanks to all of our listeners who send in their questions and share their curiosity with us.
And thanks to everybody out there who is powering science with their curiosity.
And tax dollars.
And tax dollars. The combined force of everybody's curiosity is what moves everything forward. So keep thinking, keep asking questions, keep wondering about the universe. We'll figure it out eventually.
Or at least we'll try a bunch of stuff and see which one works.
We'll satisfy our requirements technically, even if not spiritually.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for joining us. See you next time. Hey, it's Jorge from the podcast, and I'm super excited to announce that my new book, Oliver's Great Big Universe, is available to order now.
Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. with access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.